This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint, your carpet. Maybe they're animal smells. Maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own three of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get two. Be like me and get three. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse. Cultural Marxism, communism. You hear me talk about communism all the time. I talk about it so much, they started making anti-communist merch for me here at The First, which you can find, obviously, on our website, thefirsttv.com/store. But why do I talk about it so much? I talk about it so much because so many Americans, not just hardcore leftists, so many Americans, even on the right, don't understand that it's here. They don't understand what they're dealing with, and we can never, ever, ever, ever defeat the left until we accept and acknowledge what we're dealing with. First, let's establish something here. And this is hard. They hate you. They genuinely do. And I don't want you to walk around looking at your fellow neighbor, waiting for shots to be fired or something. That's not what I'm saying. But you have to understand, we're not dealing with friendly political competitions anymore. It's not like that now. They think there's something genuinely wrong with you because you are not a Republican to them. You are a heretic. As I have told you 1,000 times, communism is not a political ideology. You have a political ideology. Capitalism, low taxes, pro-life, pro-gun, whatever your stances are. That's political ideology. That's you. When you knock off work, when you're done talking with your buddies about politics or whatnot, you set that stuff aside and go do different things in your life. Why? Because it's your political ideology. It's not your God. That's not how these people think. It is their God. There's a reason they never set it aside. There's a reason everybody in your neighborhood groans when the neighborhood Democrat walks in, because they know what they're about to get. They know. They can't set it down. They can't set it aside. And what do people believe historically? Not always, I hope you don't believe, but what do people believe about their religion? Anybody who doesn't believe it is a heretic who deserves anything and everything to happen to them unless they convert. You, in the minds of these people, must convert. You must be, let's see, deprogrammed?
How are we going to really almost deprogram these people who have signed up for the cult of Trump?
We have, there are millions of Americans, almost all white, almost all Republicans, who somehow need to be deprogrammed. It's as if they are members of a cult, the Trumpist cult, and we have to be deprogrammed.
Those people that we just showed in the U.S. Capitol, how do you begin to deprogram them?
So finally, the first step, if you say this is a cult, what's the first step of deprogramming?
They say it time and time and time again for a reason. In their mind, there is something deeply wrong with you, and you have to change. You have to change. And I want to address this white thing, anti-white, the guy pointed out the right thing. You understand what I'm talking about when I talk about cultural Marxism, right? You see, communists could never sell communism to real Americans because communism, you need people to be in regular poverty and misery and starving and breadlines, and Americans simply don't live that way. Our poor don't. But we did have something else here. We had a real race thing feminist thing, LGBTQ. We have these little parts of our society that Americans inherently didn't like. They felt icky about. So what they did was they simply changed the communist language from this class warfare thing to race warfare, gender warfare, orientation warfare. So understand this. Yes, it is being institutionalized across every American institution that America is evil, white people are inherently bad, and this is all disgusting and wrong, and it is dangerous, and it is racist. I'm not saying it's not. It's terrible. It's wrong. It's dangerous. But the whole feminist movement, civil rights movement now, not the greats, but the way it exists now, the LGBTQ, whatever the letters are at this point in time, these are all just mostly unwitting front groups to usher in the same communism that communism has always been under a different label. And when I say this is in every single American institution, you have to understand something. Yeah, I just showed you a little clip from MSNBC of them talking about it. Well, you're not going to look at that and think anything of it. It's MSNBC. Of course they're going to be nutballs. This is in the cultural institutions you always thought you could trust. We have a 60-day stand down in the American military so we can look into white nationalism. This is in your kids' schools. This is in your churches.
To get at that tree, you've got to address white supremacy. And more particularly, you've got to address the white supremacy that has pervaded the church to a large degree throughout its history. I'm getting all my life from Christ. See, then I don't have to be trying to get it from my whiteness or from my rightness. And in this country, those two have too often been synonymous. To be white is right.
I'm going to go ahead and hold back because this is a family show on how angry that makes me. That's Greg Boyd. He's a pastor at Woodland Hills Church. I would just simply say, if you are a member of that church, turn around and run out the door and never look back again. That's disgusting and wrong, but Mr. Greg Boyd of Woodland Hills Church is not alone. The same thing happened to me. This is happening across the United States of America. This is an infection with America's Christianity, and that's why the cultural Marxists did it. They knew America's Christian nature, giving nature, love everybody nature, the basics of Christianity in America. They knew it could be manipulated and abused, so eventually they could get to a point where churches like this guy's, they're actually working against themselves. What do you think these people will do when they finally take over? Do you think they're going to be nice to Greg Boyd at Woodland Hills Church because he was one of the white guys who talked about how guilty he was? Or do you think he's going to get marched off first to the gulags with the rest of us? Wake up. Wake up. And this is everywhere now. Everywhere now. You don't believe me? This is a person in New York City. I'm not making this up. Quote, "My school is requiring us to discuss our whiteness and how we, quote, spirit murder our black and brown children every day because we can't see their black joy and black humanity. I am told I have to participate in this. It seems wrong to come at it from this angle. I know and see the effects of systemic racism all the time, but I know I'm not part of that." See, that's the problem too. I see the effects of systemic racism all the time. We've ingrained this in the American mind so much, it infects the left and the right. Oh, I guess I am kind of an oppressor. How much should I flog myself? I feel terrible about it. Oh, let's not forget about the white meter. Remember that? This is something, I'm not making this up. This is being shown to kids in school, the danger levels of the different white identities. And don't think it stops at racial stuff. It's not that. That's simply, again, one aspect of the communist agenda here. It goes all over the place. They're more overt about it in other places. Here, this, you remember during the Trump administration? You would see little blurbs of it. We talked about it on this show all the time. Of this college professor arrested for communist spying. This college professor arrested for communist China spying. It seemed to be everywhere, right? Harvard professor charged with having Chinese government ties. Quote, Harvard professor among three charged with lying about Chinese government ties. Understand. It's not just here. China is funding it here. This is not a one-off, this headline. I could do an entire show on just America's university system and the different ties they have to the Communist Party in China. They're here, and they're teaching your children. When you pack little Johnny off to college for 4 years, you want to think he's learning to think more and be bigger and better. You better be real careful. And it's not just the pastors. It's not just the colleges. It's even in your professional sports. You didn't think they were going to let you have professional sports, did you? You remember Daryl Morey, formerly of the Rockets, when he said, fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong, when he was talking about Hong Kong's clash with the Chinese Communist Party. Biggest star in the NBA, maybe the biggest sports star in the world. He didn't like that criticism of China.
We all talk about this freedom of speech. Yes, we all do have freedom of speech. But at times, there are ramifications for the negative that can happen when you're not thinking about others and you're only thinking about yourself. So I don't believe, I don't want to get into a word or sentence feud with Daryl Morey, but I believe he wasn't educated on the situation at hand. And he spoke. And so many people could have been harmed, not only financially, but physically, emotionally, spiritually. So just be careful what we tweet and we say and what we do, even though, yes, we do have freedom of speech, but there can be a lot of negative that comes with that, too.
Last question.
So many people could have been harmed. Not only financially, you see, he caught himself, he realized what he did. You know what he was saying. I know what he was saying. Daryl, be quiet about this freedom and oppression stuff. There's commie Chinese dollars coming in, and we're all making a bunch of money. Just be quiet. That communist money spends too, Daryl. Don't fight for freedom, man. I need a new private jet. Come on. What's wrong with you? How deep are they in us? Well, we had a member of the House Intelligence Committee get busted with a Chinese spy. They then kept a lid on it for so long, the Chinese spy was allowed to escape. What was the punishment of Eric Swalwell? He got sent right back to the House Intelligence Committee. But don't worry. I mean, at least it doesn't go clear to the top. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, it does. The President of the United States, his own son, still financially invested in it, still linked to it. It's not just Joe Biden. Take a look at Kamala.
So there's a big difference between equality and equity. Equality suggests, everyone should get the same amount. The problem with that, not everybody's starting out from the same place. So if we're all getting the same amount, but you started out back there and I started out over here, we could get the same amount, but you're still gonna be that far back behind me. It's about giving people the resources and the support they need, so that everyone can be on equal footing and then compete on equal footing. Equitable treatment means we all end up at the same place.
That is communism. Word for word, that is communism. And it's not only important for you to recognize that when you see it, you have got to teach it to your children, because it is everywhere in America now. They are being saturated with propaganda crap like that, and we have got to stop it, and we've got to wake them up. We got to wake everybody up. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. We have an awesome show for you tonight. We'll be right back. Don't worry. It's no big deal, right? It's not as if the President of the United States of America is repeating things verbatim that the Chinese Communist Party says, right?
You know, Chinese leaders, if you know anything about Chinese history, it has always been the time when China has been victimized by the outer world is when they haven't been unified at home. So the central, to vastly overstate it, the central principle of Xi Jinping is that there must be a united, tightly controlled China. And he uses his rationale for the things he does based on that. I point out to him, no American president can be sustained as a president if he doesn't reflect the values of the United States. And so the idea I'm not going to speak out against what he's doing in Hong Kong, what he's doing with the Uyghurs in Western mountains of China and Taiwan, trying to end the one China policy by making it forceful. I said, and by the way, he said he gets it. Culturally, there are different norms at each country, and their leaders are expected to follow.
Just some cultural norms. It's no big deal. What the big deal is, joining me now to talk about that, Breitbart News International Editor Francis Martel. Francis, I don't understand why everyone's so worried about it. It's just some cultural norms.
Well, the scary thing to me is that he was excusing his own challenge to Xi Jinping as a cultural norm issue. Like when he says he gets it, what he was saying was, you know, I criticized Xi to his face about these problems, but he understands that I'm culturally obligated to do that, and I don't actually care about human rights problems.
Francis, I always ask this question because I'm so fascinated by it. How did we become China's whipping boy? I mean, it's so embarrassing. It would be one thing if it was one company making pencils or something like that and they outsourced too much to China. This is so pervasive. It's everywhere. My show could be 12 hours tonight on communism here.
Yeah, I mean, my response to when did this happen is, you know, how long do we have? Because it started really with the Cold War and this sort of Washington mentality that the Soviet Union, the Russians were the real threat, and that China was a nation of impoverished, backwards people who weren't really a challenge to our empire. And little by little, we started giving them more leeway. We started treating them not as a communist rival, but as an underdeveloped country that needed our charity. And before you know it, by 2000, they're in the World Trade Organization. All of our companies are moving over there. And now their Communist Party is dictating the moral norms of our private institutions and our private companies.
How do we get them out? How's it stop? I mean, it seems so, like I just said, pervasive. It seems impossible, but nothing's impossible. What's a good first step?
Well, I think it all starts with the culture, right? It's horrifying when the president of the United States justifies genocide to appease a dictatorship like this. But to me, it's much scarier when you see the NBA doing it because, you know, my kid, our kids, they're not going to be paying attention to a CNN town hall, but they are going to watch the basketball game. So I think it starts with a genuine push from the ground up from the American people saying we're going to do what we can to avoid giving money to this regime. We're going to do what we can to punish companies that invest in genocide. And I think if there's a legitimate pressure there, then companies are going to have to answer to that.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because, look, I'm a parent. I got two bad sons, 10 and 12, and I want to take them to the new Avengers movie. They want to go watch superheroes blow stuff up. We have here, this is a tweet from 2020. It's a picture with the credits from the movie Mulan. It was filmed in some Xinjiang place that's heavily involved with concentration camps. I'm finding it almost impossible not to accidentally support the communists. How purposeful should we be with isolating ourselves from going to the new superhero movie or watching the NBA?
Well, the answer is the most conservative one I could give you, right? You know, be as heavily involved in your children's lives as possible. I'm lucky because my little one's a toddler, so she's not yet at an age where she's going to be watching this. But obviously, at some point, I'm going to want to watch movies about strong girls with my daughter without having to worry that the movie's going to end thanking people committing genocide for their participation in the movie. It's an absurd thing to even have to say this. But, you know, the way to do it is humanity has thousands of years of history and arts and culture. We don't need to depend on Disney for our movies or our books or our entertainment. And the clearest thing is to call these things out. I mean, it sounds absurd to straight up say, you know, the Mickey Mouse Company thanked people who are engaging in horrific human rights abuses, cutting people's organs out and selling them on the black market. But that happened, and that's something we have to explain to our kids before somebody else comes in like Joe Biden and tells them that that's a different cultural norm and that's totally okay.
When are you going to start talking to your kids about it? I will tell you, I understand yours are young. Mine are 10 and 12, and they know now. I don't do a lot of politics in the House because of the nature of what I do. They obviously pick up on enough to know I'm a bloodthirsty right-winger. But they do know that communism is evil, and they've known it for quite some time. When are you planning on having that conversation with your little one?
I mean, my kid's turning two, and she already hears it all the time. I'm from a Cuban family. We talk about politics and religion at the dinner table constantly. That's what we do. One of my first memories as a child was my father telling me communists are the worst people in the world. I was probably 4 or 5. I don't think it's too early ever to explain to children that there is good and there is evil. And as long as you're on the right side, you don't have to be scared.
Yeah, but what were your parents know about communism?
Well, their parents spent some time in labor camps, so that's a good place to learn about communism. So,
Francis, I'm glad you brought this up because I can't tell you how often I get this in my email inbox from people. I'm always screaming about communism. You know, I'm an anti-communist. Everybody knows that I'm a hardcore anti-communist. And my inbox is full all the time of people who've either lived through communism or their parents did, and they're screaming about what's happening right now in America. And they're like, how could you guys not see what's happening before your eyes? This is exactly what started. That's how it started here. How do Americans not see?
I think, you know, I don't want to say that we're spoiled. I mean, I was born here, so I was spoiled too. But I don't think there's ever been a direct threat to the Constitution as a whole, our values as Americans as a whole, the way that there have been in countries where those institutions are weaker. In Venezuela, for example, which was the wealthiest country in Latin America, because they didn't invest enough in having a constitution for hundreds of years, you know, their constitution was probably 30, 40 years old when Hugo Chavez threw it in the trash. It's much easier for that sort of country, for someone to come in and tell them, you know, these institutions don't matter, let's all replace them with happy socialism. That can't quite happen in America, I think, because of American parents, because of American traditions and culture, where we teach our kids to be proud of who we are, and that a lot of people sacrificed a lot for them to be able to say what they want in public. Which is good and bad, right? Because then you don't really see the threat when it's there because you're so used to being safe.
Yeah. What is the story with Venezuela? I feel like that was a hot topic for about 35 seconds, but you're Miss International. You know all this stuff. Is everything sunshine and roses down there now?
It's one of the worst places to live in the world. I wrote a story this week about people using a garbage truck as an ambulance. They put someone who was ill in the back of the garbage truck because there are no ambulances. That's what socialism is. People eat out of the garbage all the time. There's a migration crisis, the biggest in the history of our hemisphere now. 4 million people have left Venezuela. We're expecting millions more to leave. Needless death constantly, amputations because there's no antibiotics. I could go on and on, but it's a very horrible place. And the key thing to know is that 20 years ago, it was the best place to be in Latin America.
Francis Martel, you are the best. Thank you so much, ma'am. I appreciate you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, we're not done. Hang on. Well, we're having some struggles shrinking the government around here. Republicans never want to shrink it. They grow it slowly. Democrats grow it rapidly. This is a great piece I read here. Joe Biden's plan for big government. The president's bill would create massive disincentives to work and leave future generations with massive levels of government intrusion and debt. And to talk about that, because after all, it's her piece, Veronique DeRougie. She is a senior research fellow at George Mason University. Veronique, what is this plan of Joe Biden's?
The plan is to spend even more money that the government has been spending the last 12 months or like 9, 10, I've lost count, being locked in my house for so long. And even more money than they have the last few decades. I mean, both sides have been just incredibly, they've been like spent I mean, they spend like drunken sailors, and it seems that there's actually no limit to how far and how big they're willing to go, and this is what this plan is about.
Veronique, I need you to, I mean, I'm going to ask you to psychologize some people here for a moment. I realize the debt is the least sexy thing in the world to talk about, but on a long enough timeline, it is like the only thing that matters, and nobody cares about it. I can actually hear people turning the channel on my TV show anytime I bring it up. Nobody cares. Why don't they care? When this thing goes, it's going to be ugly.
You're right that compared to 2010, for instance, where there was a lot of focus on the debt, today no one cares. And in fact, a lot of conservatives have actually joined the bandwagon and use rhetoric like, you know what, we can increase the debt as much as we want because interest rates are low. And it's just, I guess, it's just not convenient to actually care about the debt, because the debt is not really what matters. Debt is a symptom of overspending. And I think in the last 10 years, to be honest, we have seen conservatives really kind of move away from the position that small government was something, you know, that's not their position anymore. That, like, achieving smaller government is just not a goal anymore. Instead, they've switched to how do we get Republicans elected on a new platform, which looks more and more like that of the Democrats.
Why? Why did they set it aside? Was it just the battle didn't seem winnable thing? Was it a genuine change of philosophy that small government isn't preferred? Why? Because I see the same thing you're seeing. I see them just setting it aside. I don't get it. Why?
So, I mean, this is not my area of expertise, but from what I read, I think kind of the election of Donald Trump has actually got a lot of conservatives to kind of reconsider what it means to be a Republican and to be and how to get basically again to get in power and to keep this power. And they've noticed that the election of Trump was very unusual. I mean, he certainly did not hold the free market. They didn't have down the free market talking points. He was very upfront about the fact that he wasn't going to touch Medicare and Social Security. He just never really talked about cutting spending. He was all about pro-worker rhetoric. And that meant basically, and that kind of basically draws the Republican Party, you know, a lot of voters that the Republicans hadn't been able to tap before. So, and I think that's what's driving it all. I think it's like the desire to get these voters to kind of join the fold, even if it means just really actually kind of like letting go of pushing for smaller government, which really means less government, not just in terms of spending, but in intrusion in our lives. If you look at what Senator Romney has proposed recently, he's proposed an increase in the minimum wage, and he's proposed a bigger child tax credit in the form of a monthly allowance, which grows welfare spending. I mean, this is quite new for Republicans.
Explain the Republican transition on growing the minimum wage. Everybody knows, well, I shouldn't say everybody knows. Anyone with a brain knows the minimum wage should be zero. Otherwise, you're throwing the entire economy out of whack. And what you make doesn't matter as much as what you make versus the cost of goods and services around you. This is basic economics that anyone with a brain knows. But now Mitt Romney lost his mind?
I don't think his views on the minimum wage represents the views of all the Republicans, but I'm giving this as an example of things that Republicans would have never been caught saying before. And now, you know, not only is it okay for them to say it, but they actually have a fair number of Republicans who follow him, or conservatives who actually just kind of think, well, maybe it makes sense, because if the party's goal is to actually appeal to workers, right? I mean, I would argue that there are a lot of ways you can appeal to workers and say, we're going to get rid of all the barriers that are getting in the way of lower income workers to, you know, work, do the kind of jobs they want to do without to have to get a license. We can get rid of a lot of the drug laws and reform criminal justice so people don't end up in jail for a variety of stupid things that the government shouldn't have a say in. I mean, there's a lot of things we could be saying to appealing to workers, but that is not what many of these guys are choosing to promote. Instead, they're promoting things that actually on paper may look okay, like forcing employers to pay their employees more, or giving more money to family. And that seems to have an appeal right now.
Explain the child tax and how that increases welfare.
So the proposal is to give a monthly allowance. I mean, it's done. It's basically expanding the child tax credit that we have now, except it would be paid monthly to people as opposed to once a year during tax season. And it would really kind of expand the amount of money that families would get for their children. Quite significantly, because depending on the age of the kids, it could go. Basically, you could get as much as $15,000 a year from the government in the name of your children. So that's the proposal, and it's also disconnected, by the way, the payment from like. The necessity to work and also to be married, and so that's roughly the proposal. In my opinion, it's a bad proposal for all sorts of reasons. The first of which is that I actually don't think it is the goal of it should be the role of the government to actually subsidize any type of activities as opposed to others. So, for instance, like. When you subsidize having children, you do it at the expense of those who don't have children, in the same way as, you know, like you subsidize green cars, or whatever. It's, I mean, I know people see that there's a substantial difference between the two, but not necessarily. But also, this proposal could create some significant disincentive to work. And the third one, it is growing welfare spending. And the way it is doing it is like, while it is sold as a deficit neutral proposal, it is like the vast majority of the way it makes it deficit neutral is by increasing taxes. So 2/3 of the increase of spending on this new allowance comes from increasing taxes, and 1/3 comes from consolidating programs, so spending cuts. And so, I mean, he proposes to cut, to increase taxes in the way that I don't mind. I hate the state and local tax deduction, but I think like a more free market position, if you're going to be increasing taxes or getting rid of this type of deduction, you should do it in exchange for lowering taxes somewhere else.
Veronique, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
We're not done. Hang on. I am excited about this one. It may just tug at the heartstrings a little bit, but joining me now is Republican strategist Peter Lumage. He is the author of the book, My Father's Prayers. Peter, I don't want to put a single word in your mouth. Your father's prayers. What are you talking about? Tell us about your father, please.
My family and I are from Albania, which was a communist country. And my father always prayed that one day his sons would be able to live in freedom and find opportunity for their lives. When we decided to escape Albania, we were four brothers, me, Tony, Paulie, and Freddie. And the probability of making it into freedom, it was almost zero. Anyone who was caught at that time daring to escape communist Albania would have been either executed or imprisoned for a long time. And I believe that but for my father's prayers, we would have never made it to freedom and never made it to the United States.
Tell me about, from what you know, tell me about existence in a communist country before we get to the escape from the communist country. And I highly recommend everybody read this book. But tell me about what it was like there. Why leave? Wasn't it wonderful? Wasn't everything equal?
Communism is about denying God-given rights to human beings. It's pure evil. Anyone who tells you otherwise, you can ask anyone who comes from Eastern Europe and will tell you the exact same story that I'm telling you. We were told by the government what to think, what to say, what schools to attend, what kind of food to eat. We were pretty much belonged to the government. We were slaves until 1990. The population of Eastern Europe, especially Albania, we were enslaved by our own government. We had no freedom. Our God-given rights, as we know them here, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, they were completely denied. And that was the main goal of the communist regime, was to make sure that people understood, based on their views, that our rights didn't come from God, they came from the government. And we had to appreciate that. So that was the major concern that lots of Judeo-Christian believers, especially northern Albania, we disagreed with this. And thousands of people, hundreds of thousands, they were arrested, they were interrogated, they were beaten, they were tortured, they were executed because they disagreed with the communist government.
What is the decision like, from what you know about it? What's the decision like? You're a man. You've got these sons. Obviously, a man's sons mean everything to him. I have two of my own. What's the decision like? We've got to risk everything, risk you and your own sons dying to get out of here. What is that moment like?
Look, I wish I could speak with my father at this point. I mean, he passed away, and I could ask him that question. The hardest decision, I believe, for my father was when we made the decision not to see him again. When my brothers and I escaped Albania, communist agents, they surrounded my house. They picked up my family, including my parents, my siblings, nieces and nephews, and took them to a concentration camp. My father was tortured to death in that camp, and I never seen him again. And he was tortured because he failed to notify the government, which was a requirement at that time, that you pretty much spy or snitch on your family members if they ever thought about leaving the communist, the so-called, you know, the beautiful place that they created for us. And I wish I could have asked him that question, but I never seen him again.
Tell me about your life now, your brothers' lives now. Obviously, your father made a sacrifice that is, that's a hero stuff right there. What has that done for the lives of you four?
Look, I believe that he made that sacrifice so his sons could live in freedom and liberty. And we came to the United States. We didn't speak word of English. We didn't have anything. We came here as refugees. And at that time, we could have been scattered all over the world. I could have become a Canadian citizen, Italian citizen, whatever at that time we wanted as refugees. But we decided to come to the United States because we believe that the United States, regardless of what we hear from the liberals, it is an exceptional country. And when I hear elected officials that they, from my point of view, they are completely ignoramus when they describe exceptionalism as thinking that we are better than other. We're not claiming that we're better than the rest of the world. We're not better looking than the rest of the world. God doesn't love us more than the rest of the world. What we have over here is a unique arrangement that we have between the government and the people. For the first time in Western history, we had written documents. The founding fathers made clear to us that we are superior, if you will, to the government, and the government is serving the people instead of the people serving the government. And this is the beauty of the United States, and now we should never forget that.
Peter, do you see anything out there now? My whole show tonight has been on what we're seeing now, this cultural Marxism, this communist infection in the American society. Do you see anything out there now that scares you in the United States?
Absolutely. Look, the entire threat that we have right now is an internal threat. It is an ideological threat. the liberals, the statists in this country, they want to make sure that they are going to erode, eliminate, and replace the Republican form of government that we have with a judicial government, and make sure that all major policy outcomes are determined by unelected officials and imposed upon the entire nation uniformly. The United States is not a small country like Albania. We are a federal republic, if you will, and we have 50 states that are independent within the union, and that should never be allowed to happen in the United States. Republicanism is very important. Constitutionalism is very important. The founding documents of this country are extremely important, and the moment that we deny that to the American people, we're not going to become anything else or anything more than just a simple country in the world. America is supposed to be exceptional because of the founding documents, should remain exceptional. The world should be interested in knowing that America should be the leader of the world because we are a force for good. Our Judeo-Christian values have served the world well, and I think that we should maintain those values.
Where did we go wrong? We used to fight tooth and nail against communism around the world, Eastern Europe, Soviet Union, all of it. We were the commie fighters. We were the anti-communists for the world. And now we're repeating communist China talking points. Our president of the United States is. Our major sports leagues do what China says. Our movies are edited by communist China. They pick up the phone and edit movies. How did this happen?
Look, I think we failed with our public education. We allowed the educational system to turn our students actually into anti-Americans, and I hate to say that, but we have allowed our educational system to fail. We no longer teach Americanism. We no longer teach what makes America great. We no longer teach the founding documents of this country. As a matter of fact, I mean, we have the left-wingers in this country that they believe that we are somehow irredeemable, a sexist and racist and you name it country, instead of teaching the greatness of this nation. The entire Eastern European countries, including Albania, they are trying to move towards a free market, to move towards democracy, to move towards freedom and liberty, whereas the United States is trying to embrace an ideology that has failed millions and millions of people.
Peter Lumage, God bless you, brother. Yeah, I appreciate you very much. What an awesome story.
Thank you very much for having me, sir.
Remember this. I've told you 1,000 times about the emails I get. The people who have experienced it, the people whose parents have experienced it, it's not just that they're talking about what it was like to live under communism. That's expected. It was terrible, it was terrible, it was terrible. They're telling you what it was like to live under communism. They're warning you. They're warning me. It's happening here. It's happening right in front of us. We have got to be aware of it. We have got to tell other people about it, or we're toast. People have got to wake up around here. All right. We're not quite done yet. Hang on. First of all, allow me to plug some merch before I get into my final thoughts here. Why? Because anti-communist merch is awesome, and I like to make money. This one you can find at thefirsttv.com/store. thefirsttv.com/store. We got anti-communist t-shirts, sweatshirts. We got mugs. We got all kinds of stuff there, so go buy some of that. Lastly, our fight right now is not really to defeat communism in America. I mean, that's the end goal. But our fight right now, the fight you and I both have, is to wake enough Americans up to realize that's what we're facing. That is the next mountain we have to climb. In the end, we want to defeat it. The mountain in front of us right now is getting your buddy, who really doesn't care too much, to wake up and realize these people are trying to dominate and destroy everything. Until we accept that, until we accept what we're facing, we will not win. So let's keep chopping away at it. Keep spreading the word out there. We'll do it again. I'll see you. You don't have to dip forever. You know that, right? You don't have to smoke forever. And the reason I say it like that is I have been that guy. I've been that guy. I dipped for so long. And what would happen is I would decide I'm going to quit. Oh, that's bad for me. I'm going to quit.
I'm a man. I don't need any help. I'll just get a quick cold turkey. And I would fail time and time and time again. I tried things like the patch. That didn't work. Gum, sunflower seeds. I tried it all. It's just a matter of finding the right thing to help you quit. That's Jake's Mint Chew. Go, put in your dip. Just make sure it's Jake's Mint Chew. It's tobacco-free. It's nicotine-free. It's even sugar-free. And I highly recommend, just a personal choice, I highly recommend their CBD pouches because it really helps take that extra edge off. Get a jakesmintchew.com. That's jakesmintchew.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse at checkout. When you do that, you get 10% off.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.